I think it's helpful to maybe just walk through kind of what Ethereum is, right? I think it's still a very vague concept for a lot of people. Like maybe to contrast it with Bitcoin. Bitcoin's main value proposition is that it's a scarce digital asset. And it's now emerged. It's only 21 million Bitcoin that will ever be generated. And because of that, it's scarce. And if enough people believe and it has value, then it has this forms this belief network. And effectively, people use it as a reliable and neutral store of value. That's kind of the Bitcoin value proposition. But it doesn't do anything really else beyond that. And it doesn't want to. It just wants to solve the money use case or the store of value use case in a digital format. You can't really write an application to Ethereum, right? There's nothing for you to do. That's part of the reason why when you join one of these like Bitcoin Clubhouse or Bitcoin Twitter, the only thing they will ever talk about is the price, because there is nothing else to talk about. You join Ethereum Twitter or Ethereum Clubhouse, and it is just an endless deluge of kind of technological development and software releases. Ethereum is software. I mean, Bitcoin is software too, but it's software that has no roadmap, or the roadmap is very done, basically. The Bitcoin people think that the less roadmap, the better, because then you can't screw it up. With Ethereum, it's an extremely rich roadmap. It's like going to the AWS reInvent conference. It's like, okay, the year is 2021. What new features are we going to ship this year? What new features are we going to ship next year? How are we going to improve the user experience for wallets, for storage, for insurance? It's like it's viewed as the same way as a software company would manage their product roadmap. So it's this constantly evolving piece of software. And because of that, stuff is built on top of Ethereum. You can be a software developer on Ethereum. Being a software developer on Bitcoin has very thin meaning. It basically means like, oh, we can maybe support it in the wallet. You can't, there's nothing you can do. And the reason why Ethereum can do this is because Ethereum is a network of computers it's a network of computers that elect to run the Ethereum software to validate transactions. And the way you deploy applications to the Ethereum computer is by targeting this runtime called the Ethereum virtual machine. Java has a virtual machine. Ethereum has a virtual machine. You see the parallels very clearly. And you write applications to it. And this virtual machine runs on top of actual hardware. It could be x86, could be ARM. And these are about 10,000 computers distributed in the world. So people treat it like a computer system that they run, just like they treat AWS as a cloud that they can deploy applications to. So when people think about, like, I find that people who don't like Bitcoin because they find it to be a little bit of a more about a religion around a digital rock and constantly fighting this belief system, it's very political. That when that doesn't resonate with them, I find that it resonates better when you talk about Ethereum as, don't worry about this cryptocurrency nonsense. It's just software. Okay, and you can write applications to it. And you know what? If you're a software developer, you can, and you know JavaScript, the language for Ethereum, which is called Solidity, is very similar. You can deploy an application in a weekend. And once they can see that, you don't have to argue about supply and tokenomics and all that stuff. You just treat it as kind of a place where you can deploy useful applications. And I think that's the right way to view it as software. That gets rid of all the unhealthy debate about prices and you know, your blockchain versus my blockchain, it's just software.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I noticed there's this dichotomy, it feels like, in the crypto world, where you have a certain camp that really focuses more on the belief, right? The belief and adoption create the value, right? And then you have another camp where it's more on the utility and the usage, like it has to, you know, create some unique value, and that value gives the blockchain or currency, whatever, right, its value. And it seems like there is this dichotomy where, you know, you have certain Bitcoiners who are in this, who cares about the tech? It's about all about the belief, right? And and there seems to be kind of a religious bent, you know, with this a bit, where it's like, you know, Satoshi is, you know, higher level being, and, you know, like Bitcoin can never be improved on, and this is the final, like, end, you know, state of whatever. And it feels like, you know, you're taking this other camp. You're saying, hey, you know, that's like that's not what it's all about. It's about software. It's about utility, right? Do you pick this up? You know, this dichotomy in like the crypto Absolutely. World and like,
It's very rooted in human psychology. Like humans really want to believe in stuff. And once like there's a certain subset of humans, I think that have the temperament of, I must pick a system to believe in. And that fulfills a bunch of functions for their like livelihood. Like you belong in a church for various reasons, right? You need to solve the problem of the meaning of life. You solve the problem for how do I find community. You solve for belonging, you solve for loneliness. Like there's a bunch of reasons you solve for, and it's kind of like classic religions are the kind of this bundled solution to that. And that instinct is very deep in our genes. And it manifests over time throughout history, just in different ways. So in the same way as someone would be very kind of, someone who is would be very religious in the Middle Ages. If you take the same person, you put them, you make them born today, they find new things that they can be kind of religious and attach themselves to. And like the same person literally born today would probably be really into Bitcoin, right? And that temperament is leans toward more attachment to beliefs rather than modification to beliefs. And then there are other people in the world who on preferential scales like Myers-Briggs or Big Five, this like openness to new experience. And they tend to just be more open in thinking. That's what these people would tend to self-select to systems that are changing. So it's like if you zoom out a bit, it has more to do with human temperament preferences rather than underlying realities. There is going to be a subset of people who have strong genetic inclination to attachment to belief systems. And Bitcoin is perfect for them. Christianity would be perfect for them in the first century, right? But right now, it's like, this is perfect. You have a mysterious figure. You don't have a lot of literature. You have one piece of original literature, the Old Testament, that's called the Bitcoin White Paper. Like, it's exactly the same thing. I'm going to prescribe to this, and I'm not going to change. And then, of course, just like Christianity kind of broke off into various sects over the last two millennia, now you have Bitcoin Cash, you have Bitcoin Satoshi Vision, you have different levels of, like, purity in the religion. It's exactly the same thing. If you zoom out a bit, there's like nothing new under the sun.
Mm. Do you think Ethereum has a chance to beat out Bitcoin as a store of value? Do you think it can become a larger market cap, say, coin in the future?
Yes, I think so. The reason is, like, to think that Bitcoin is the final word in what blockchains can do is kind of ridiculous because it's the first invention. You never have a situation where the first invention is literally the best and the final. That would be like saying, you know, the IBM mainframe when it was invented, imagine a group of people saying, this is the last computer we'll ever need. This is the only true computer. All subsequent computers are shit computers or fake computers, you know, and then like that's ridiculous. We know that's just not how things work. Also, Bitcoin is an application-specific technology, so it solves one use case. It solves for money and nothing else. And insofar as there are other use cases, these other chains will try to fulfill those use cases, right? So Ethereum is a generalized solution. Basically, you can use it for a variety of applications. And that TAM has to be definitionally larger than the one simply for money. So one way to think of it is Bitcoin kind of is the digital equivalent of gold. Whereas Ethereum is kind of like addresses the entire financial system. In the financial system, gold is just a subset of things that you trade on the stock exchange, right? Gold is just a subset of money. So it's almost definitionally smaller than the TAM of Ethereum. And right now, I think Bitcoin is bigger just because it's had longer time to tell its narrative, to convince buyers. It has bigger mind share than Ethereum, mm-hmm. but it has smaller TAM than Ethereum.
Yeah.
So, like institutional buyers have been hammered finally to like maybe accept Bitcoin as something they should consider in their portfolio after a decade. But the Ethereum story, people are still afraid to say the word on CNBC. So it's just earlier.
Yeah. It seems like Ethereum is like, you know, when smart contracts first came out, it was like a great idea, but to figure out exactly what to do with it, it was a challenge. But in the past couple of years, especially with DeFi and other uses, it's like, oh, okay, there's some product market fit, and the story is just getting started with Ethereum. I'm curious, if Ethereum is able to flip Bitcoin in terms of market cap in the future, who knows how long that will be, if it's a few years or several years or whatever, what's the point of Bitcoin then? Like, can Ethereum be that store value, that digital gold, in addition to this, let's say, alternative crypto economy universe, right?
Yeah. I don't think it's a zero-sum game. I think people, like, the reason why we have such diverse numbers of everything is because people have such diverse beliefs and value systems. I think Bitcoin serves a perfectly good role as the most secure, the most like Lindy and like censorship resistant digital store value. I think if you just rank it on store value security, Bitcoin is still the most secure because it's just it requires more computation to verify. And Ethereum is going to switch over to a new kind of blockchain system called store proof of stake, and I think many people would argue that is not as secure as Bitcoin's proof of work algorithm. So, like, just like gold has a role in the current modern financial system, even though we're no longer, you know, in Florentine times, even though we have Venmo and all this digital stuff, gold is still a thing. And then we came up with GLD, an ETF to trade this stuff. Like, it has anything that's had 1,000, 2,000 years of history has a place, and people recognize it for what it is. I think Bitcoin will always be kind of the original, and people respect it. And it could be the ultimate, like the safest way to store value when Ethereum and these other chains, because of the fact that they have a software roadmap, they have the potential to introduce bugs. They have the potential for mismanagement, for misgovernance. There will be always be, I think, a need for something that is, call it permanent, immutable and ossified, which is kind of, these are words that don't sound good, but these are words that, like, for Bitcoin community are positive features and people want it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think one way to look at kind of Bitcoin actually is, I think, in the bigger picture of the entire kind of crypto, kind of alternative, this economic crypto system, where Bitcoin can be kind of like the easiest on-ramp, the easiest exchange to get into that system, perhaps, you know, the most popular at this moment. And, but there is something much bigger than Bitcoin, you know, where if you look beyond just the Bitcoin conversations and you look to what's happening on Ethereum and other blockchains, there's a lot of innovation happening. There's a lot of companies, you know, creating stuff and people adopting stuff. And you mentioned the whole thing about lending and borrowing, right? With, let's say, Compound and Aave and others. Like, what other kind of big use cases have you seen on Ethereum? You mentioned NFTs as, you know, another big one. So are those kind of the two big ones recently that you've seen on Ethereum, which is the lending, borrowing, kind of earning interest, and then number two, NFTs? Are there any others? And if those are the two, like, what about those two use cases are exciting to you?
Sure. I just put out a newsletter on kind of five actually useful things that blockchains can do in 2021. Like, these are things I think normal people would be interested in, not just like people in crypto. You ask someone in crypto what, like, oh, hey, can Ethereum do anything? They'll be like, yeah, you can mine for liquidity on automated market maker. And you're like, what? What does that mean, and why would I be interested? They think very funny. So I picked out things that, like, normal people would be interested in, and you can check out the newsletter. But I think of the things we talked about, lending is by far the most no-brainer activity you can do, because just the number of people who have a bank account is in the, you know, billions, and the number of people who would be interested in earning a above inflation rate return on just your savings is everyone on Earth. So you could argue that's a TAM of 7.5 billion people right there. And Ethereum would do that for you today, right? So if you have $1,000 and you want to earn some interest, if that's lingering in your bank account, that's earning less than 0.5% interest. You can shoot that $1,000 to Coinbase and convert it to a stable coin, so like USDC. These stable coins are not speculation instruments. They're pegged to the US dollar. So one for one, you turn into $1,000 USDC. And then you deposit it into one of these crypto lending platforms. This is just software again, right? This could be Aave, this could be Compound, this could be Yearn, dozens of options for you. And roughly speaking, it will earn you like 10-15% APY on that immediately. A couple of things different about how this is versus like a CD or a term deposit bank. A, there's no term, so you can deposit it anytime, you can withdraw it anytime. There's no like limit. Like, if you do a CD and you withdraw early, there are nasty penalties and all kinds of nonsense with that. The second one is it's a variable interest rate, call it, you know, account. So one day it could be 10%, the other day it could be 12%. It fluctuates based on the market demand for this specific stablecoin you're depositing. And the third is to use these pieces of software, these crypto lending protocols. Like if you've ever used any traditional finance software or app, the sign up process, the onboarding is like the most torturous part, right? It's like provide your name, your social security number. I don't know, can you even open a bank account online? Like maybe go to your branch. It's just like the most onerous thing because financial products have the most onerous regulation. On these crypto lending and borrowing platforms, you can get everything done without so much as even supplying an email address. No social security, no driver's license, not even an email address. You literally plug in your wallet address. You literally have a wallet, kind of like MetaMask, that's in your browser as a plugin, and you click lend, and then it syncs with your wallet, and then it happens, like, and you can get this done in like 5 minutes. It's incredible.